In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xennial. But what is a Xennial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xennial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
How y'all doing this week? So we are on Star Wars week, as I call it. Mike kind of gave me a funny look.
No, it hit me after, you know, it didn't really need to take a lot of explanation. It kind of hit me as soon as I figured it out there.
Well, I mean, look at the shirt, man. I'm wearing one of my new Star Wars shirts. Because, of course, Star Wars is coming out. In fact, the day that you hear this podcast will be the first early showings of Star Wars. Yeah. I am seeing it at 6 o'clock.
I will not be able to do that.
Well, actually, funny note, if you recall back to... It was the night actually that we had our friend Scott come and do the podcast. I was sitting on your couch catching the halftime show of Monday Night Football.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So they'd show the new trailer.
Yeah.
And directly after watching the new trailer, I bought my tickets right then.
Yeah, because they went on sale like at that time. Yeah, like they went on sale with the trailer debut.
Yep, and I went. I was sitting on your couch and I bought my ticket at that moment.
Yep, I remember that.
That's my ticket.
James may or may not be a slight diehard Trek Star Wars fan.
Never Trek.
I am the slight diehard Trek fan.
Yeah, you're more. Yes, definitely more of the Trek fan.
I would say passing fan for both, but I have an affinity towards Star Trek. I would say.
Well, it's kind of funny. Almost all of my friends are way more Star Trek fans than they are Star Wars fans. Like they're okay with Star Wars. They'll watch it. They're like if you tell them pick one, they almost always pick Trek.
I don't know. I personally, I think they're both epic in their own way. It's a completely different type of sci-fi movie.
Okay,
it's
like, it is because one is actually sci-fi and one is actually fantasy. Because Star Wars is much more fantasy than it is sci-fi.
Very much so. They don't really talk. There's not a lot of. There's not a lot of concentration on the technology or the society or that so much. I mean, it's more used as a background and a setting for the adventure itself.
The way I see sci-fi.
Yeah.
I guess this is somewhat to what you're alluding to. There's an attempt at real world grounding, and more importantly, almost all really good sci-fi is supposed to be a glimpse into. This world's our reality's kind of future and our reality's possibilities.
Exactly.
Whereas Star Wars doesn't quite fall into that.
Take place in the future.
Well, no, it doesn't take place anywhere near us. As it says, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
There you go.
It's a totally it really sets the idea this is a fantasy epic. It's not necessarily a sci-fi epic.
Exactly.
And that is there's science fiction-y technology, but I mean, if you really think about it, okay, in Star Trek, right? Mm-hmm. You had the communicators, the various pieces of technology that the people use at different points.
Yep.
We've seen replications of those technologies. Mm-hmm. We've seen, Picard in Next Generation is using basically the prototype of tablets. iPads.
Yep.
The communicators are prototypes for our modern day cell phones.
Yep.
Even the Bluetooth pieces for the cell phones. The wearable pieces for the cell phones.
Yeah.
This is stuff that doesn't necessarily happen in the same way in Star Wars.
Mm-mm.
I mean, they have communicators and whatnot, but when people were trying to make these things, they weren't looking at Star Wars as, we're going to make the stuff that exists in Star Wars to make it a reality.
Right.
They were looking more towards Star Trek and making that stuff a reality because it's supposed to be an extension of our world, a possible future for our world.
Yep.
And that's kind of the big, big, huge difference. And I can say, I am, when it comes to the things that I love, I'm much more of a fantasy lover than I am necessarily a sci-fi lover.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
I mean, think about it. I like the Lord of the Rings stuff very heavily as well. I mean, once a year we watch the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Once a year, full in one day.
Wow.
We do it, and by the way, extended editions.
You marathon the extended.
Because I don't even own the regular editions. I own the extended editions only. And yes, we will have a full day of Lord of the Rings where we will watch all three of them in a single day. It's like 12 hours or more of viewing, and we will do it.
Mm-hmm. I'm still looking for my I picked up the extended first one.
Yeah.
At Dimple when it was closing down.
Yeah.
And I'm still waiting for, like, I have theatrical for the second and the third, but I'm waiting to find the second and the third.
I get it.
But
we have them in those cool boxes where they're
the
like
book the type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have those.
Oh yeah. That's the extended one I have, the first one. I want the other two to complete the collection. The red and the blue.
Oh, it looks so nice when they're sitting together on a shelf.
Oh yeah.
I'm also a huge Harry Potter fan. Books more than the movies, but still I'm a huge fan of those, and we'll do a we do marathons of those. We do Harry Potter marathon, I think, at least 4 times a year.
Ooh, boy, that's a lot of it's a lot of Potter.
Dude, me, the wife, the kids, we're big movie lovers.
Dig it. I understand.
And actually, scientific studies have shown that rewatching movies and TV series that you actually like is actually good for your brain. It puts your brain in kind of a calm, safe place where you can do a lot of deep thinking, because you're watching. Most people think, oh, this is a repetitive thing, we've seen it again, but it triggers those happy memory centers, and it helps your brain actually work through different thought processes.
Oh, okay.
Because you don't have to focus as much on the thing because you've seen it before, but it brings you joy and happiness from your remembrances of it.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And so that's why there's people who will like re-binge watch whole TV series again.
Yeah.
It actually helps get them in a calm, sedated place where they can work through their mental things better. Be it just their dealing with their day-to-day stress.
Yeah.
Be it whatever. It's the same principle as like when you're feeling down, right? I'm sure that there's specific music you like to listen to when you're feeling down.
Yeah.
When you're feeling angry, there's music. It's the same type of principle as that. Those things trigger those various centers in our brain. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm mad, I try to channel my energy into something productive. So usually when I get mad about something, I start cleaning house.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to get my anger out. I'm doing something physical to get my anger out in a productive way.
Mm-hmm.
And I have one album I go to when I'm mad. I have others when I get to when I'm sad and reflective and when I'm happy. But I have one album I go to when I'm mad. I turn it on. I blast it as loud as possible while I'm working. Master of Puppets. Metallica's,
I like it.
Metallica's Master of Puppets. It's heavy. Works. It's heavy enough, and by the end of it, I'm able to get through all my anger, get through all my stuff. But it's also not so. It's not like it's Justice, where it's like heavy but also angry.
Right.
It's heavy, but it has some good points, good political points in it, good anger moments. But it's also got some cool down stuff, some calming stuff that I can work through all my anger, get through all of it. It's got good beat to it to keep me moving. And that's kind of my
I can see that.
That's
that makes
kind of
sense.
My work through album when I have those kind of issues.
That makes sense.
So the movies, though, rewatching movies that you love can do the exact same thing for you. Can help you get through various issues. I have a few movies that I'm feeling super emotional. I kind of want to work through all those emotions. I watch those movies, have a good cry, and I'm done. I'm good to go.
Okay. Yeah, I get you.
But
I can get you.
But anyway, so Star Wars.
Yeah.
A new movie coming out.
Yeah.
And I'm excited. I will give on next week's podcast, I will give a good or bad report. I will not give any spoilers.
Okay.
Because I'm not a spoiler type person. I don't do that to people.
That makes sense.
If you ask me in person for spoilers, I'll ask you, you really want to hear. If you do, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to hear anything about it beyond good, bad, whatever, then I'll give you that.
How many times are you going to see it over the weekend?
Once. I don't have
just
time.
Once.
I don't have time to do
all that waiting and just once. Didn't you even see Last Jedi more than once in theater?
I saw it twice.
Yeah,
but one time was by myself. One time was with my son. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to get him to the theater in the first weekend to go see it.
Gotcha.
If we have the capability, we may do it on Sunday.
Okay.
I'm not gonna have time Saturday. I have some personal commitments, and then Saturday night is a football game.
Cool.
So gotta watch a football game. Can't miss that. But Sunday, if we have the opportunity, I might get him in. We'll see what happens.
Cool.
But
okay.
Yeah, I know the
I'm just surprised. I'm not.
No,
you know.
the last couple Star Wars movies, I've only seen each of them once in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Or sorry, twice in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Once by myself, once with my son.
Cool.
So I usually go by myself the first day so that I can just sit through the movie and watch and not have to worry about anything but focusing on the movie. I don't like anybody that I know there with me, because I just like to be able to have that moment of clarity watching it just by myself.
Okay.
And then afterwards, especially my son, who at the beginning of the third act of any movie suddenly has to go to the bathroom, because he cannot watch a movie without a giant soda and a huge bucket of popcorn.
Cool.
So the third act of it, he's, Dad, gotta go to the bathroom. And it's like, oh, great. We're going to miss like 15 minutes of this movie. I'd rather do that on my second run through of the movie than on my first run through and be irritated. I don't have a reason to be irritated with him. He has to go to the bathroom. But I would be irritated missing the movie the first time I'm watching through it. So I do. I make sure that doesn't happen. I watch through it myself.
Cool.
And then come back. Now, if it's like his movie that we took him to, Godzilla, I don't mind missing a few minutes of that because I wasn't as interested in it as something like Star Wars.
I can understand that.
That was more his thing than mine.
Yeah.
Although, if you ever get the chance, the Godzilla King of Monsters, great movie. For anybody listening, the Godzilla King of Monsters, it is what I've been hoping for an American-made Godzilla movie to be.
Oh.
It's freaking amazing. It gives more than enough time to the different monsters,
mm-hmm.
and the monster battles are epic.
That's great.
They are really good. But
I've had a bit of an interest in it. I think it just came out on like Blu-ray recently too, so I think I might be able to pick it up.
It is out. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. The son has it already.
Of course he does.
Of course he does.
That just makes sense.
Hell yes.
Yeah.
But with the new Star Wars movie coming out, of course, there's the Star Wars TV series that's getting rave reviews right now.
The Mandalorian.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's been teasing because it only releases one episode a week on Fridays.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which is kind of neat. It's been making people have to stay and come back, you know, come back every Friday to watch the new episodes.
Shout out to a buddy of mine. Actually, yeah. guy's name is Mike Streets. I see him on Facebook all the time.
Okay,
probably one of the best cosplayers I've ever seen. So oh. I just went to a game con, like a little low, you know, I would say low key, not really, gaming convention.
Okay.
Up in the Sacramento area.
Okay.
And it was cool. It was like a retro game con. So
nice.
There was a small video game museum full of a bunch of old rare stuff. We picked up a gift. My wife and I picked up a gift for James. It's the only time I had ever seen it, and I'm like, he's got to have it. So we picked that up for him.
It's very beautiful. It's balsa wood, right?
I think it's balsa. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a balsa wood Star Destroyer.
Yeah.
Which is just, I mean, it's beautiful. That's all I can say. But anyway, you're at this con.
So yeah, we're at this con, and this Mandalorian's walking around the con.
Is he?
And it's my buddy Mike. And he is.
Did you get pictures?
I did not get pictures.
Because I'd love to see what he did for his armor design.
I don't know what he does, but I was shocked by how good the entire costume is. I'm talking like war wear all over the costume and everything.
So he's just a random Mandalorian.
He's just a random Mandalorian, but legit as hell.
Nice.
Like, he's one of the best. I'll have to show you some of the stuff he's done. I've played shows with him in some of the Prilosis gigs that I played with him. He was in a band. I think they might still be together. I'm not sure. He was in a band called Chernobog, who's very death metal-esque.
Okay, yes.
He's the guitar player.
Okay.
He's the one who had the crazy Halloween masks and stuff. Like, he was like telling them, this is what you guys do. Like,
okay.
I would say it's not quite Slipknot-esque. It's a very different kind of a style.
Yeah.
But I could see, like, just he's really into that. This guy is an incredible, incredible cosplayer. One of the best I've seen ever.
I definitely want to see some pictures of
so
this.
I'll find some other stuff that he does. He's insane. My favorite costume that I've seen him do recently.
Yeah.
Two-Face.
Oh.
And I mean, the whole face makeup thing, the acid melted on one side of the face with the white contact and the whole thing. The hair is a completely different color on one side of his face. So good. The two-tone costume.
Is it referencing any specific Two-Face or just, again, his interpretation?
No, I think it's just his interpretation.
Okay.
And it's so good.
Nice.
So good. So I'll show you that one for sure.
For those of you who don't know, there are multiple interpretations of Two-Face from the comics to the various film iterations of him.
Did you ever see the costume of the Batman Who Laughs recently? The guy who...
Yeah, I think so.
That's him.
Oh, okay.
He did the Batman Who Laughs. The whole face mask with the spikes across the front of the eyes.
Okay.
And he had the Joker grin and everything. He makes his own masks. And he's so good at it.
Nice.
It's insane. So yeah, huge shout out to Mike he was there at that Game Con
as that random
cosplayer, as a random Mandalorian. It was flipping great, man.
I will say for the series, there's been some really interesting things in the series. I think they're at episode 5 or 6 now, but there's been some very interesting things. One has been the number of interesting cameos.
Oh, really?
That have come up in it, and or in just small roles that people have been in. I mean, Carl Weathers is in it for the first couple episodes.
Carl Weathers, Apollo Creed?
Apollo Creed and Chubbs the golf instructor.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And he has, in the first couple episodes, he has actually a pretty significant part.
Really?
Yeah.
Carl Weathers is now in Star Wars. That's insane. Okay.
Ming-Na Wen.
Oh, cool.
Which is nice. Which is nice for anybody that's a fan of just about anything that she's been in, but specifically Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And then for those of you who don't know, she was also the voice of Mulan in the animated Mulan.
Yep.
So she's comfortable within the Disney realm of things.
Yeah.
And she plays a pretty badass assassin.
Cool.
Favreau apparently has a voice part. Jon Favreau.
Jon Favreau. Nice.
Who's actually he's the guy who's in charge of the series. He's show running the whole series.
He does everything comic book based, pretty much. Well, he didn't, though. Especially working with Disney or Marvel, like.
Well, he didn't, though. That's one of the funny things about the Jon Favreau story.
Didn't he direct the first Iron Man film?
First and two.
The first two. Yeah.
Now here. Let me backtrack a little.
Yeah. For sure.
Because you probably know Jon Favreau originally from. I know what I know him originally from. Swingers.
Yes.
He wrote that.
He wrote Swingers?
He wrote that. Now, I think it was, Doug Liman who directed it.
Yeah.
But he wrote Swingers, and Swingers was about his attempt to try to get jobs in Hollywood. The character that he's writing about, in the character that he plays in Swingers, is basically him.
That's great.
And, of course, Swingers was lucky enough to give the world Vince Vaughn, which is nice.
Right.
But then after that, do you know what other big movie that Jon Favreau directed?
After that, no.
Elf.
He directed Elf?
He directed Elf.
Oh.
What is now considered one of the better Christmas night movies.
Yeah, it's kind of a staple now.
Yeah, for many people. And it's probably one of the
there are many people that are extremely critical of Will Ferrell in general. Love Elf.
Yes, that's the only movie
that will pass for them.
Interestingly, that and I'm not a huge Will Ferrell fan on most things.
Mm-hmm.
He does amuse me in the Ballad of Ricky Bobby, just because that's a hilarious movie all around.
That's so good.
But that's less him and more John C. Reilly. I love John C. Reilly in everything.
Both of them in most of the stuff they've worked in is pretty good.
They work funny together.
Sherlock Holmes was a disaster. But.
See, I liked that. I thought it was funny. But
really? Wow.
Yeah, I thought it was funny.
Okay.
But I do like some stupid comedies.
And yeah, I'm
very familiar with the Sherlock Holmes catalog of things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of funny in-jokes there.
Yeah.
If you've read Sherlock Holmes stuff, you've read the actual Arthur Conan novels.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, there's some.
Oh, so they're doing nice, takes on some.
There's some sly there's some references
deep
in there.
Deep cuts in there, huh?
Yeah. But the other movie.
Yeah, now I went. I heard it was a disaster. Didn't see it. Wanted to see it really bad. Heard it flopped hard, and I was like, nah.
I mean, it is stupid. Don't get me wrong.
I got convinced away from seeing it.
But keep in mind, I'm a fan of Mel Brooks. So this is a similar type of. To me, it's a similar type of. Parody on the genre.
Okay, so this already works in pretty well with everything I've ever seen of them. Like Step Brothers. I saw Step Brothers.
See, and that's one of the ones that everybody loves and I don't like as much.
But I understand people expecting to see Step Brothers in the middle of a Sherlock Holmes story are going to get grossly disappointed.
Yes.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's not that.
So it's probably a lot more clever than... It a is lot definitely of the Step Brothers gross out humor. You can't,
it's
you know,
way more clever than Step Brothers.
You can't have somebody whipping out their scrotum in the middle of a Sherlock Holmes film. It's not really like a something
you can,
that.
But, I mean, you can.
They do, don't they? That's funny.
I don't
of
remember if
do.
That part happens. But the film I actually really like Will Ferrell in is a movie called Stranger Than Fiction. Which is one that most people don't know Will Ferrell. It kind of went under the radar.
Is that the one where he plays the IRS auditor?
Yes.
That is a great film.
I love that movie.
That's like Punch Drunk Love Good.
Yeah, that's one of those movies that I watched it and I was just like, this is transcendent. First of all, the opening of the movie with so you're familiar with this movie.
Yes.
The opening
I am.
Of the movie with all
so
the
good.
With all the gooey on the screen.
Yeah.
That's just amazing. for those of you who don't know what I mean. By saying that there's gooey on the screen, Go ahead and watch the movie. And then have somebody who knows about computers explain it to you.
Yeah.
Because it's not what you think at all, unless you know about computers and you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yep.
But the story of that, and you have you have him in that movie with Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
Which she's a fairly decent actress.
Yeah.
You throw in Queen Latifah, who has become a better actress over her years of experience, but then just to shake it up a bit, throw in Emma Thompson.
Yeah.
We're talking Academy Award nominee. I don't know if she's won yet or not. But then you throw in Dustin Hoffman. We're talking, these are some high caliber actors in here with Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
And Will Ferrell actually steals the show in this.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
It's very much a surprise. Like, it makes you, it really made me reconsider Will Ferrell as
an actor
in general. Like, this is, I would consider this, it's very underground, so I wouldn't necessarily consider this to be of this caliber, but I do consider it his Tom Hanks moment.
I see what you're saying.
I very much consider it that. I think that if
because I mean
people
you and I remember Tom Hanks as being, you know, the guy from Big and
Turner and
Splash
Hooch.
And Turner and Hooch.
Yeah, he was a comedy character.
What was the TV series he was on?
Bosom Buddies.
Bosom Buddies. We remember him from that until suddenly he like
that's a way back one. That's like way before both of us, by the way.
And well, I still remember it. And then he's Dragnet. And in Dragnet, he's not the star. Aykroyd is the star.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd's the star of that movie. And then you get, then suddenly you get Forrest Gump, and it's like, actually, no, I'd say Philadelphia.
Philadelphia was first, right?
Philadelphia hits it, and then Forrest Gump, like,
that drove it in.
Yeah.
Forrest Gump drove it in. Philadelphia was one that you just did not expect to happen.
Well, because Denzel was really the star of that.
And yeah, I don't know, man.
Denzel Tom Washington was the star of that, but
did he get best supporting for that?
No, he got best actor.
Tom got best actor.
Tom got best actor for Philadelphia, I believe.
Oh, wow.
I believe. I'm not 100%.
And then from there, Spielberg throws friggin' Forrest Gump at him.
No, that's not Spielberg.
That's not Spielberg?
No, that's Zemeckis.
Oh, that's Zemeckis.
Robert Zemeckis did Spielberg. Spielberg threw at him Saving Private Ryan.
Wait, Zemeckis was Thriller, right?
What, the video
he
Thriller?
He directed the video for Thriller, right?
I don't know if he directed Thriller or not. I know that Scorsese directed Bad, but I don't know if he directed Thriller.
Scorsese directed Bad? I didn't know that.
You know Wesley Snipes is in the Bad video, right?
Yes, I do know that.
Yeah, Scorsese directed the Bad video.
I did not know that.
I don't know how cinematic it is, but Scorsese directed it. Sorry, had to.
Dude,
come on, man.
By the way, I did not know. Okay, let's bring up The Irishman for a second.
Yeah.
I had no clue what The Irishman was about.
Yeah.
Did you know what it was about?
Yeah.
You knew it was about Hoffa.
Yeah.
That makes me want to see it.
So
it's based on a legitimate true story.
So you're interested in seeing, you know, that Goodfellas is based on a legitimate true story.
Yes.
So
that was
again,
half the appeal to Goodfellas.
Again, so you're interested in seeing another Martin Scorsese movie about gangsters. All right.
That's fine.
Go right ahead.
That's fine with me.
That's
Don't
good.
Mock me.
I'm not mocking you. I'm saying, all right, go right ahead. I am not interested in seeing another.
I can understand that.
Scorsese movie about gangsters.
I can
gangsters.
Understand that. But, you know, exploring something like that, that's something that a lot of people have
much,
there.
I would much rather watch another Spielberg movie about somebody with daddy issues.
Was that an Indiana Jones reference?
No, that's every Spielberg movie reference. In E.T., the kids don't have a dad. In the Indiana Jones movies, he has issues with his dad.
Right.
And then in the most recent Indiana Jones piece of garbage, Shia LaBeouf has issues with his dad. Who's Indiana Jones?
I never put that together.
I mean,
what happened to Steve?
Jurassic Park. The two kids in Jurassic Park have issues with their parents. And Sam Neill's character plays like kind of a pseudo father role for them throughout the whole movie. Which it's present in the book, but not done in the exact same way as the movie does, because Spielberg has issues with that. Or at least he likes to do movies with issues with that. AI.
Wow.
Which was originally, AI was originally a Kubrick project, but Spielberg took over it.
Right.
And you can see where Spielberg had his little things go with it.
Interesting.
Yeah, Absent Father is like a huge issue with Spielberg
movies.
I did
not realize that.
Yeah, that's kind of a running trend in his films.
Now... Oh, now I have to go and see if there's any one of those where there's a kid doesn't have daddy issues somewhere in it.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah,
I don't know. That's kind of commonplace, though. Like
it is, but it's like it is.
It's a relatability
Spielberg
plot
uses
point,
that in almost
it?
Everything. Well, it is. It is a very relatable plot point. And so he uses that to his advantage.
Okay.
I guarantee if he had been given the opportunity, well, I mean, think about it. Return of the Jedi, which was the Star Wars movie he was going to do, smacks of daddy issues. And so, I mean, I'm sure we would have found out that Wicket's dad, if Spielberg done it, Wicket's dad had somehow died when the Imperials were first.
You kidding? Star Wars, the entire series is daddy issues, the trilogy.
Yeah. Well, who did George Lucas go to college with? I'm just saying. Funny enough, Francis Ford Coppola has come out in defense of Martin Scorsese.
Right.
There's a couple others who have. You know who hasn't?
Who?
George Lucas, who went to school with him.
Hmm.
And Steven Spielberg. Do you know why? Guess who used non-cinematic, non-cinematic amusement park movies to make their gigantic fortunes? And think about
that
it.
Which ones are the rich ones speaking out against their own... films.
Yeah, which one of those groups are the rich ones?
And
which
ones are not? Don't use rich as a defense point, man.
I'm just saying they've made a bunch of money off of their movies. Spielberg has.
I get it.
Lucas is
marketability and the ability to sell those films
but
to
I'm
children.
Just saying,
he's not concerned with kids when he makes his
films. I understand that, but I'm just saying that's, you know, there's a difference involved.
I get it. I understand that. Isn't that like one of the argument points that he had in the first place?
It is, but I'm just saying maybe there's a little bit of, maybe with Scorsese, there's a little bit of saltiness that he's not as rich as his two buddies.
That I can understand. This comes down to attacking not attacking the point of the argument, but more so about going after the character.
Well, here's an example
of the person
for
making it, but it, that's still like
here's an
I
example
can see
for
it.
You.
There could be possibly some bit of jealousy that may be a source of that. I'm not going to use that as a crutch into that's not going to invalidate the argument.
Well, but I mean, to give you a similar argument, there is a. I guess you'd call his hair strawberry blonde.
Opie?
Guitarist, singer, who was kicked out of a band, made his own band, but his own band never got as famous as the band, never got as rich as the band that he got kicked out of, and there was a big grudge for
a
lot of years.
Boy, there is a huge contention. Yeah, you've got masses and scores of people at odds about that.
And I mean, is it really because of being kicked out, or is it more because of missing out on that?
But he straight up admitted that he started that band. We're talking about Dave Mustaine of Megadeth. He straight up admitted that he started Megadeth because he was salty.
Yeah.
That's the point.
And I mean, there's some of that in it. But anyway, the original point we were talking about was Jon Favreau.
Yeah.
So let's backtrack to that. So yeah, Favreau had written Swingers and was in Swingers.
Yeah.
He had directed Elf. Okay. He had done a few other things, acting things.
That's
and
really
whatnot.
Cool. I didn't know. Okay, continue.
But then when Iron Man came around, Marvel wasn't sure about it. It had one of the smallest budgets of any of the Marvel movies, obviously, because it was the first one to kind of launch the MCU.
Yeah, they're not sure that this was going to be anything that's going to work.
And they were working with an actor who had basically been down and out in Hollywood, and in Robert Downey Jr.
They were kind of
just giving him a second chance to try something and see what would happen.
Yeah.
And they weren't even sure about him, but he nailed it screen tests.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've seen the screen tests. He's the character already in the screen tests. He is perfect.
Yeah, but Robert Downey. Well, I mean, that's kind of been Robert Downey Jr. as like
himself. Basically,
he played himself. So all it's practically what they did was Robert Downey Jr. was Robert Downey Jr. during his screen test, and they're like, "That's Iron Man."
Yeah,
it was just like, "Be you."
Well,
okay?
Tony anyway.
Yeah, because Tony's always been kind of a bit of a smartass and a little bit of a. He's been a little bit of that, but it wasn't like Downey Jr. took it to that nth degree where he made it a charismatic character.
Well, not at first, though. At first, in the beginning of the Iron Man movie, he's kind of a pain. He's kind of a problematic person.
But that's part of the turnaround of the character itself, but he retains all of that smart aleckiness, and he's still playing...
Tons of
he's
character
still being
growth.
Robert Downey Jr. with a goatee. Like, that's pretty much it, except super rich, and he has... a mechanical suit. Like, that's kind of...
Yeah.
I'm not trying to break down the character to a simplistic level, but the reason why it's good is because it works. It works. It's perfect.
It does.
Don't change that. That's, you
so,
know...
So Favreau was
that's
given...
That's my point.
Favreau was given the reins of that.
Okay.
And then he directed that.
So did they give it to him because they're just like, he's like a lower-level guy. Let's go ahead and try it. But Favreau's been around for a long time.
He's been around in Hollywood for a long time. He's done a lot of guest writing on stuff. He's been involved in a lot of different things. But nothing major. Nothing high profile. And Iron Man wasn't necessarily high profile.
Right.
This is just, we'll try this and see what happens.
Okay.
And boom. And so with the success of the first one, they give him the second one.
Yeah.
By the time the third one come around, they went in a whole different direction. Interestingly enough, do you know who directed the third Iron Man?
That wasn't Branagh. Branagh did Thor. I know it was a bigger name director, though.
No, it wasn't.
Who?
It's a guy named Shane Black. Now, most people don't know him because he's been a writer for years. He's directed a few movies, but he's been a writer for years.
Mm-hmm.
What he was best known for?
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the Lethal Weapon movie.
The first one?
The first one, I believe, and the second one. He might have even wrote the third one.
Wow.
And if you note, it's something interesting about Shane Black. He loves to set his movies around Christmas time. There's something about the way he likes to do movies. Lethal Weapon is around Christmas time. Lethal Weapon 2.
Did this guy write Die Hard 2?
Iron Man 3 is around Christmas time? No, he did not write Die Hard. At least I don't think he did.
Wait a minute. So under the rules that Die Hard technically is a Christmas movie, like many people tend to argue,
would you try to argue that Lethal Weapon is a Christmas movie as well?
I
could see that point.
That makes Batman Returns a Christmas movie. That makes Iron Man 3 a Christmas movie.
I could see those.
You know? Like, ones that are specifically themed around Christmas, like Home Alone, is a Christmas movie.
Although, I can say that I like the concept of Die Hard actually being a Harry Potter movie instead of a Christmas movie even better.
Excuse me, what?
Dude's running around a tower trying to get away from Alan Rickman. It's a Harry Potter movie. I find that amusing. I'm not necessarily arguing or advocating for it in a way. I just find that really, really
mental
funny.
Picture of Daniel Radcliffe screaming "Yippee-ki-yay."
No, he wouldn't scream it. He'd say it in his, you know, "Yippee-ki-yay." I can't even do his accent, but he'd do it in his little British accent. How about Hagrid doing it? Anyway,
Mr. Falcon. Oh man, you don't know that. Oh, I'm going to give you... Okay. Okay, you know Stranger in the Alps, right?
Yes.
Monkey fighting snakes.
Yes.
Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon is the
really?
TV edit.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That's awful. I've never seen an edited version of it, so...
It's funny.
That I haven't.
It's funny.
But anyway... Back to Favreau. So,
back to Favreau. Well, because Favreau was a consultant for 3, too, right?
Favreau was a consultant. He's actually been an executive producer on every Marvel movie since then.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, he's been executive producer.
He's in, like, the Spider-Man films now and, like, all this. He's, like, major
His character at this point, right? Happy Hogan is, like,
a
main character in all the stuff. I mean, he's technically a secondary character, but as far as the MCU is concerned, mm-hmm. he is a main important character.
Yeah.
So he was the one that Disney trusted with kind of the reins of doing this Mandalorian show.
Cool, man.
So he's the showrunner. He's the executive producer. He has kind of the handle on it.
Cool.
But back to talking about the Mandalorian real quick before we take our break. It's been an interesting series for people who are big Star Wars fans
mm-hmm.
and who can get some of the small references that they're talking about, especially those people who have been Boba Fett and Mandalorian fans.
Mm-hmm.
They really are delving into the whole traditions that are a part of Mandalore, and the fact that Mandalore was a world that exists in the Star Wars stuff, that it mm-hmm. It's had many civil wars, many different problems, because there are various warlike factions and kind of tribes within Mandalore.
Right.
Technically speaking, Jango and his clone Boba
yeah.
are not true Mandalorians. They may have come from Mandalore, but they don't follow the true Mandalorian way.
Oh.
And they never really have. They do have, Jango did have a full set of Mandalorian Beskar armor, and Boba's was just kind of what was left over from it. But again, they don't entirely follow the Mandalorian way, especially Boba, who is well known for his disintegration of people that he was hunting. Okay. Mandalorians don't necessarily kill unless they have to.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They're warriors. They're not killers.
Okay.
If they have to, they can be, you know, pretty difficult to deal with, but right. They don't just kill people randomly.
Interesting.
But you do see the Mandalorian does have a rifle that is a disruptor rifle that basically disintegrates people shooting them.
Okay.
It's kind of amusing when he disintegrates somebody because it's literally one of the most beautiful things I've seen in any kind of film to see them be disintegrated. It's beautiful. That's all I can say.
Okay.
but the big news on it, which doesn't give away spoilers because anybody that has any social media would know about it, is the Baby Yoda.
Yes.
And yes, he's called by the internet Baby Yoda because right. We do not know what Yoda's species is named. He is not Yoda.
You have Yoda is the only one of that entire species that's existed
Yaddle.
So far.
Yaddle.
Who's Yaddle?
Yaddle was in episode one. She was a Jedi Master in episode one.
Wait, there was a female Yoda?
There was a female of Yoda species in the Jedi Master chambers when Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan brought Anakin there to have him tested.
Really?
There's a female there, yes, and her name is Yaddle. But we have no idea what planet they come from in the Star Wars universe. We have no idea about their history. In the legends, in the EU legend stuff, the extended universe legend stories,
right.
There are other of his species that have stories, mm-hmm. but you still have no idea where they come from, and you still have no idea what their species are called. However, every single one that has ever been seen or talked about or whatever is force sensitive.
Okay.
And fairly powerfully force sensitive.
That's okay. Yeah, that's what I was kind of collecting from this. But if you have proof that there are others, even though the species hasn't been named, and you could see that there's at least one male and one female around that time period, and
are you theorizing this could possibly be Yoda's
creature
kid?
Is 50 years old? Yeah, it's very well possible that it could be.
It's possible, although we don't know how they reproduce, so we don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
We don't know if they even have traditional male or female in the way that we understand it.
Right.
So,
because aren't, I mean,
although,
isn't,
although
isn't,
the way we understand it is not entirely correct, but that's a whole nother
stuff. Luke and Han and Leia and all them, they're technically human, right?
They're under
their
the
lifespan
of
is along the average lifespan of
yes.
most humans. Is
yes.
that not correct?
That's correct.
So that means legit that it's only been, 15, 20 years from episode 3 to episode 4, right? Technically speaking,
episode 3 to 4, you're looking at about 20 years.
So if you're speculating here, that's still, let's see, episode 3 to 4, and then Jedi, the time frame between Hope and Jedi is what?
Like 30 years?
From Hope and Jedi, it's supposed to be a 30-year span?
Wait, you're talking about New Hope?
No, yeah, I was going to know. That's 30
so
years
four
between
to six,
Jedi to,
from four to six,
from
about,
six to seven.
About,
it's only like a 2 or 3 year span, right?
From 4 to 6. So 4 is New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
6 is Return of the Jedi.
Right.
It's about a 3 to 5 year span.
3 to 5 year span.
Yeah.
Okay. So technically speaking, that this could have happened near. That means that this Baby Yoda character was born in like around the time of like episode 1, if not beforehand.
This would have been born either most likely around the Clone Wars.
Or between 1 and 2, yeah.
It's
okay.
Around the Clone Wars time.
That's fantastic.
Because between 1 and 2, there's like a 10, I think a 10-year gap between 1 and 2. And then between 2 and 3, there's like another 5-year gap.
Yep.
Which is covered in the Clone Wars.
Yep.
So, I would have to get the exact dates, and it's all interestingly.
So I like this cool speculative stuff.
You know how they run the dates in Star Wars stuff?
I can't remember what date they base it around.
Battle of Yavin.
That's what it is. Yes.
Yeah. So the battle that happens at the end of Episode 4.
Yeah.
Is how they do the dates after Battle of Yavin, before Battle of Yavin.
Yeah. ABY and yep. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. BBY and ABY. Mm-hmm. Yep. I remember.
But anyway.
Yeah. I started. I remember. I think I texted you like 6 months ago because it finally snapped for me that. The idea of Anakin Skywalker being an Immaculate Conception, technically speaking, means that he was created by Darth Sidious because that's what Sidious was able to do. They talk about it in episode 3.
Yeah.
That's like that's the twist.
Yeah.
Like
that
it explains Anakin's conception.
Technically,
but
Sidious
it does
is
it
his dad.
In his it does it in this it does it in this weird, like ambiguous way where
actually,
you have to put it together.
No, the comics have actually shown it now. There's panels in the comic showing it happening.
That show the conception of... Kinda, oh, wow. Yeah. Wow.
It's a little creepy.
I mean, yeah.
But but anyway, there's references to... there's references to Gungans, in fact. Jar Jar Binks. Well, not Jar Jar Binks specifically, but references to Gungans. There's references to...
In Mandalorian?
In the Mandalorian, yes, sorry. In the Mandalorian, there's references to Gungans. Because the Mandalorian, by following the ways of the Mandalorians, he never removes his helmet. None of the Mandalorians ever remove their helmet where other people can see.
Oh.
Including the audience. You never see... the actor that's playing the part is at least the voice part and is the physical part, I'd say about 40% of the time, when it's not the action sequences, is Pedro Pascal. Best known recently for being in Game of Thrones.
Oh, cool.
He's had a few other roles. In fact, he's also in the new, what movie is it? I'd have to come back to you because I know he's playing a villain in a new movie. I just can't remember which movie it is. He's blonde in that movie. I just recently saw a trailer for it. Have to come back, report back on that one.
Yeah.
But, again, known very well for his Game of Thrones role.
Yeah.
And, he's just the voice at this point. He's sometimes the physicality. The rest of the physicality is actually done by John Wayne's grandson, of all people. Yeah, he's a stuntman. Not an actor, but a stuntman, which is how John Wayne started in films, was as a stuntman. So, kind of neat that John Wayne's grandson is, and especially because it has kind of a Western feel to it.
Yeah.
It has a Western feel and a definitely a Kurosawa feel.
Cool.
Which is what inspired the original Star Wars was Kurosawa movies.
Yeah.
So there's even a Seven Samurai movie reference in one of the episodes. It's literally the same plot of Seven Samurai or The Magnificent Seven for those of you who are Western fans.
Now I really want to see it.
It's the same plot. There's only two people. It's the Mandalorian and a former Republic shock troop.
And they help a town of farmers. They help a town of farmers. Against, yeah. Oh, that's fantastic.
They take on an AT-AT, actually.
Cool.
Oh yeah, a town of farmers, and two soldiers taking on an AT-AT.
Kind of reminds you of like the Ewok fights.
Actually,
and stuff,
actually,
huh?
It shows you how badass the Ewoks kind of were, because the Ewoks were able to take out a couple of AT-ATs.
Yeah,
a Mandalorian and a former Republic shock troop have to, and the shock troop doesn't even have all of her armor. Her armor, by the way.
Cool.
You've seen the first Deadpool, right? Obviously, the one female bad guy. Who's beating the crap out of?
She's gonna do a superhero landing. Yes, yeah.
She's an MMA fighter in real life.
Yeah,
she's the she plays the part of the former Republic.
God, I
want to
see this series, man.
And it's got a lot of fun cameos with people. Natalia Tena, who played she was in the Harry Potter movies. She was Nymphadora Tonks, if anybody's a Harry Potter fan.
Yeah, I don't even know what you just said to me.
She's a European actress. She's a Twi'lek in the one of the episodes.
Cool.
Bill Burt, comedian.
Bill Burt?
I think
Burr?
That's his name. Burr. Maybe it's Burr. Bill Burr? Burr? Yeah.
Yeah.
Comedian.
Smart ass redheaded guy?
Yes.
Yep, that's him.
He plays actually a former Imperial sharpshooter.
Okay.
And he's a smart ass. Clancy Brown. Plays a Devorian. Those are the ones with the red face and the horns.
Oh, cool.
Look kind of like a devil. You see him in the original episode 4 when they go into the cantina.
Yeah.
Clancy Brown. For those of you who don't know who Clancy Brown is, for the younger listeners, he's Mr. Krabs from SpongeBob SquarePants.
Oh.
For the older listeners, he's the Kurgan from Highlander.
Kurgan,
you know, the bad guy?
Yeah.
Yes, the Kurgan from Highlander is Mr. Crab. He's also a drill instructor, either Dim, I think it's Dim or Zim, from Starship Troopers.
Cool. Oh, I know.
Yeah,
he's
the one that throws the knife into Jake Busey's hand.
Yeah.
If you can't
Boy,
push
that's
a,
been a while yeah, since I've seen that.
Starship Troopers, great movie.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, great series so far. A lot of different little references. They make a Canto Bite reference, which is a location in The Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sequence where a sandcrawler full of Jawas, which, by the way, Jawas don't only exist on Tatooine. They exist on many, many planets.
Mm-hmm.
A sandcrawler of Jawas takes apart the Mandalorian ship. And he disintegrates a few of them, uh-huh. and then he tries to chase down the Sandcrawler and tries to attack the Sandcrawler. He literally climbs onto it and tries to attack it.
Right.
And there is a whole action sequence of the Jawas defending their Sandcrawler. And all I got to say is Jawas, I on a single basis, I'd beat up one of them little things. But if there's a whole group of them in a Sandcrawler, I might be a little scared. Because their defense of their Sandcrawler, it's a hell of a thing to watch.
All right.
It's yeah. Jawas are some little badass dudes. That's all I got to say. So cool. There's a lot of really cool sequences in it. If you haven't gotten to see it yet, get yourself some Disney Plus. Find somebody else who has it. Or whatever you need to. Watch the series. It's really good.
Cool.
Get yourself prepped for Star Wars. Okay. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, I think Mike may have one or two topics said he wanted to talk about. And I have an interesting story about picking up things I had bought that were on layaway.
Oh, yeah.
And a person that I encountered. And it's relevant because we've been talking about all kinds of, you know, fan stuff, Star Wars, Marvel, all those things. Well, I had kind of a discussion about those things with this person. And I'm going on a little rant about people like this person.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right. We'll be back in a minute.
Hey, friends. This is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening. And now back to the show.
And we are back. First, coming back, I know I said I had a story I was going to discuss. First thing I want to do is mention a couple of people that are celebrities that kind of passed within the last few weeks.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
One of them, his first name is Renee. His last name starts with an A. I cannot pronounce it because I think it's a French name.
Yeah.
But most people would know him as Odo from Star Trek, right? Odo?
Yeah, Odo from Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
He just recently.
He passed away. He's been on a lot of different things, been a lot of voices in a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But he recently passed away. And then one that's a little bit closer to me, I'm sure maybe closer to you.
Yeah.
Carol Spinney. It's not a name that most people would know,
mm-mm.
but you would know that the characters that he was responsible for. He was a puppeteer
uh-huh.
that worked with Sesame Street.
Oh, okay.
Most specifically, he was the creator and voice of the character of Big Bird.
Oh, man.
And, interestingly enough, Oscar the Grouch.
Really?
And now, I'm sure he hasn't been doing the voice for a few years now because he was an older gentleman.
Yeah.
But he was the original voices for both of those and was the original puppeteer for Big Bird.
So, how old was he?
So, I don't remember. I think he was in his 80s.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
But when we were growing up watching Sesame Street,
yeah.
if you were watching Sesame Street and you saw Big Bird or in the various Big Bird movies that happened,
yeah.
that was Carol Spinney in the costume. That I'll was him down. Doing it.
Wow.
So, yeah, kind of
long time back.
Kind of sad to see that happen. I mean, it's going to anyway because he was an older gentleman. I think the one that's going to hit me the most will be Frank Oz. I mean, Henson.
Dude, Frank's going to devastate me.
Henson hit me bad when that happened because like there was you know no more Kermit. In fact, Rolf the dog wasn't even used as a character or did not speak as a character until the new Muppet movies came out.
Yeah,
because that was his.
It was
favorite.
In honor of Jim, right?
Yeah, it was his favorite character to play.
Jim that was favorite and was Rolf. that was a good way to kind of send that off.
Yeah.
There's also, I remember the first film that they did after Jim passed.
Was that Muppets?
Muppet Space? Christmas Carol.
Oh, was it Christmas Carol? Yeah. Yeah, Rolf didn't Christmas say anything. Carol.
Yeah, Rolf didn't say anything. He said nothing.
He didn't in Muppets from Space either.
Yeah. Mm-mm. But yeah, I remember that. And I remember that was a huge, huge, huge thing.
Yeah, his son like, did the voice of Kermit for that.
I remember my dad being like, you know what? They did real good. Like, yeah. I remembered him like he was going to be super critical of it, but he saw it and he loved it. It was one of the Christmas movies that I remembered as a kid watching all the time because it's one of the best ones.
Interesting casting choice at that time period for Michael Caine to play in that. But
yeah,
worked out fantastic.
Right? Oh, he was wonderful.
But anyway, sorry to hear those two are gone.
Yeah.
They were very entertaining actors and performers.
Yeah.
So now switching gears. Like I said, I had something I was going to talk about my encounter with a person while I was picking up layaway items.
Yeah.
But Mike has a very interesting topic he'd like to talk about real quick.
Yes.
Apparently okay. An interesting topic. I know nothing about this. I am surprised that
you haven't heard about this. Okay. So a few of you guys might have heard about this. All right. So I'm going to set up the story for you.
Okay.
Okay. Because this actually happens. This is all of it is true. I do not remember any names. I'm going by memory from seeing all of the news articles that have come out on it. But, so, there is an artist that...
Now I think I know what you're talking about. Okay, go
on. I'm going
to
tell you all of the things. Please tell me. And, the story this paints is wonderful. Okay, so there is an artist that recently had a piece that is...
this is an art piece, right? An art installation.
It is a art piece in a museum that he put up. Now, the name of the piece is called The Comedian. That's the name of the piece. Okay?
Is it a picture of Joaquin Phoenix?
No. Better.
Is it a picture of oh God, what's his name? Jeffrey Dean Morgan?
No.
Okay. That would be even better. But
on. Get this. So, the piece is literally a banana. It's a banana.
Yeah.
Duct taped to the wall.
Okay.
No frame, nothing. It's just a banana duct taped to a wall.
Okay. Now, when Mike originally was saying,
I am not getting to the end of this because there is a legitimate, please continue.
When Mike was saying, hey, I have something I want to talk about. I want to talk about, have you heard about the banana? And I'm like,
We did this off air.
What, like the thing that people eat? That's what I was thinking. I didn't say anything. I was like, I mean, I know that there are bananas. I buy them on a regular basis for the people in the house, but something about a banana? And then I make a reference to a Gwen Stefani song, but that one I did out loud. But I'm just like, I don't know nothing about no banana because it wasn't clicking with me. And then that's why with the second he said an artist, I'm like, oh, I get it now.
All right. So
I get it.
Another couple of things just to kind of throw it out there. The first one is that are you familiar with – now, this is not the artist that did this, but are you familiar with another artist named Banksy?
Are you talking about the one
– the graffiti guy.
Are you talking about the painting that he did where people bought it and then it got shredded right as they bought it?
Yes.
Because that was amazing.
Yeah. Okay. So that's to preface this, there's a lot of artists that have come out recently where their intention is to mock the idea of art as it is interpreted by so many people.
I get that.
That's the point. So, a preface to the story is a guy named Banksy. Nobody knows who he is. He's an anonymous graffiti artist out of Europe, out of England.
It's me.
Yes. Hashtag James is Banksy.
Please don't spread that. Anybody who's actually maybe do that could get
please
some,
do
that could get some people, more people listening to us. Yeah,
could also get James arrested. Banksy put together a painting where it was a graffiti painting. It was a spray-painted painting.
In fact, it was
and a, it sold for like $1 million.
And it was a painting of a graffiti.
It's like $1.2 million.
It was like a replication of a graffiti thing that he had done before.
Yeah,
wasn't
it was just
it?
A replication, but it was some done girl with by a balloon. Him. Yeah, some crap like that. I can't remember what it was, but basically, he put the piece together, he framed it, and then he sold it at auction. It was sold at auction.
Yeah.
Now, he happened to physically be there because what he had done is installed a remote-controlled, battery-operated paper shredder into the picture frame.
Yeah.
So, when the piece sold, sells for $1.2 million.
The moment the sale is finished.
Right after the gavel gets hit, I think it's like a couple of minutes past the gavel.
No, it's like almost immediately. It was almost immediately.
The gavel gets hit, the piece sells, and the paper gets like 70-80% of the way shredded, and now it's... Yeah. Shredded underneath, like just, and people are like, oh God, what just happened? Like people are freaking out; they don't know what's going on.
Which, funny enough, for me, if you're buying it for the idea of having a one of a kind piece, that makes it even better for me. But that's just my feeling on the matter.
Yeah, totally. All right, so now this trend of artists mocking art for the sake of mocking art is like my favorite thing right now.
Okay.
All right, so this guy. This other artist, I do not know his name. So apologies, but respect to this guy and respect to everybody else involved in this.
Okay.
And I mean everyone. So this guy puts together a piece. It's called The Comedian. Okay. Now, the point of the piece is the fact that rich jackasses will be obsessed with anything. Like, I don't know, I could duct tape a banana to the wall and people will go nuts. We'll probably be able to sell it for a bunch of money, right? That's the point. So what happens? This guy duct tapes a banana to the wall. He is the original artist. Everybody goes nuts. They start taking pictures of this thing in the museum.
Yeah.
The piece ends up selling for $120,000. And the reason why the piece is called, or at least I'm interpreting this at this point, the reason why the piece is called The Comedian is because of how funny it is that people are obsessed over such a simplistic form of art. It's just loose interpretation. And that's the point from the original art creator.
Yeah.
So this piece sells for $120,000. It's a banana duct taped to the friggin' wall. That's all it is. It's starting to like go bad. It's starting to rot.
This and, pisses me off.
And as a matter of
fact, this really pisses me off.
Just in general?
You know why?
Because anybody could come up with it?
I wish I had, damn
it. I know, right?
I would love to have $120,000 for taking a banana and duct taping. I have bananas at my house.
There's been parodies of this, too. My favorite one.
I have duct tape at my house. I'm sitting on...
What the hell?
I'm sitting on over $100,000 at home.
There's guys that are making money by printing out Instagram posts and removing the names and calling it art. Like, this guy, like, controversially, like, 2 or 3 years ago, sold... literally printouts of Instagram posts that he edited the names off of and then printed them verbatim and sold them for $10,000 a piece. And he couldn't get sued over it because of artistic integrity. Technically speaking, this is where art has gone, and this is why this guy did this piece. Because jackasses like this will become obsessed over the dumbest crap. I'm not trying to say this to be facetious. I think this is the point, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful that he's made this statement.
But like, oh wow!
And the guy's $120,000 richer now.
Yeah, I mean, lucky
for a banana duct taped to the wall.
Lucky for him, being able to get that. I mean, this brings up a conversation that I had recently with some people because how do I want to put this the right way? I have a little bit of like what I consider positive jealousy.
Yeah.
Like when somebody that you know is good at something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like happy for them being good at it.
Yeah.
But like at the same time, you're a little low key jealous because like you wish you could be as good as that person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not jealous like you wish ill on the person or you want to like rob their abilities away.
Yeah.
You're still like totally in awe of what they can do
mm-hmm.
and love them for what they can do. But like, damn, I wish I was as good as that. But I'm just going to enjoy him or her being good at that. Well, I'm having this reaction recently with my two boys, my sons.
Yeah.
I know I've shown you my oldest son's pipe cleaner sculptures that he's made.
Yeah, that's amazing.
For people I haven't talked to it about or haven't heard about it, my son is taking pipe cleaners and he's a huge Godzilla fan, huge fan of kaiju movies in general. Anything with big monsters in it. And he has made replicas out of pipe cleaners of Godzilla, Rodan, King Ghidorah,
yeah.
all of these Toho monster movie creatures. He's made them out of these pipe cleaners. And I'm not talking just simple. They're 3D. They have like heft and bulk to them.
Yeah.
And he just is making these out, and all the limbs are the same size, the tails are right. He has multiple versions of the Godzillas that are based on multiple iterations of Godzilla with slight differences in the spikes, the length of the tail, the shapes
That's
of the
fantastic.
Head. It's amazing stuff. I'm in awe of him. Again, I'm a little jealous because I wish I had the artistic ability to do that he does. My younger son has been working in doing art stuff in school where he's working with mainly painting, but also he did a collage artwork piece. I have an online thing where I can show you, Mike, the collage artwork thing that he did.
Yeah.
Which is just with natural stuff, leaves, twigs, that kind of thing. You put it together in this collage. We have the original work at home,
mm-hmm.
but he's got an art thing online where it's posted. But even the paintings that he is doing, brilliant. Great use of color, great use of space. It's beautiful stuff. That's like, again, I'm low key in awe of it because he's just, I'm not even looking, I'm totally in awe of the stuff that they're doing, the artwork they're doing. And it's mainly because I can't do anything close to that. When I, if you want me to draw something, like you want me to draw a person, you're getting a stick figure. If you want me to draw a house, you're getting the, if I was to draw a person and a house, just a basic picture of that, you're seriously getting what you would expect from like a kindergartner or a first grader.
Right.
There's going to be a squarish looking house with a triangle thing on top, maybe a chimney coming out if I want to be kind of, you know, it's going to
get into real detail.
It's going to have two square windows in the front and then the door. The person's going to be a stick figure. Halfway up the page is where the grass is going to start and it's just all going to be green around it.
Right.
And I will put a sun in the corner of that piece of artwork, because that is literally as far as my art ability goes.
I wish we had cameras on us right now, because the way that you pointed at the corner, right there in the corner,
right there, that's where it's gonna go, because I my art ability is there. That's as far as my art ability ever really got. Sorry, there was one thing I like to do where you put like, you take a piece of paper and you put multiple dots on the piece of paper.
Right.
And you have like three different color crayons and you do like a little bit of a border around each of the dots with one color, then the next color, then the next color, and then go back to the first color. I used to make those. That's where my art ability really ends. I am not artistic in any way like that. And to see my children be able to take those images in their brain and put them down onto something, create them in that way.
Yeah.
I'm in awe of, because in anybody that can do art in any way like that really has me in awe of them, because my brain does not send those signals to my hands to do that kind of thing.
Right.
I can't do it. So to me, something like literally taking a banana and duct taping it to a wall would just seem so stupid. I can't even see the artistic value in that. I can't even see that doing anything, but this guy to do that, it's just...
Well, see, here's the crazy part about it. And this is why I love the piece for what it is.
Yeah.
Okay? The reason why I like it is because the art is not the banana. That's not the art.
No.
The art is the people being obsessed over the banana.
It's more of a performance art thing than it is an actual physical art thing.
Speaking of performance art, there's a second part to this story.
Oh, God. What is it?
Okay. So, another person... a performance artist.
Yeah.
In the middle of, you know, knowing and understanding the obsession over this banana duct taped to a wall, takes the banana off the wall and eats it.
Nice.
In the museum, in public, in the middle of the day.
Wow.
And everybody freaked out.
Wow.
The owner who bought the piece is rushing to the museum. What the hell did you do to my piece? The original artist goes, oh, good, he got it. Yeah, you just duct tape another banana to the wall. The original artist said, oh, yeah, that's exactly it. He gets it. It's cool. Yeah, just go ahead and duct tape another banana to the wall. That's fine. That's the point.
Wow.
The reason why it's called The Comedian, again, is because of the obsession over the piece as a misinterpreted piece of art. The art is the obsession, not the object.
No, I get
you. So this guy gets it and goes, oh, this is about everybody being obsessed over it. Here, eats the banana.
Wow.
So this is, this is the performance artist got it. And I remember after this thing had been up there for like almost like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Or like a week or something after this thing sells.
Ew.
He ate it. He ate the banana. Dude, the banana was starting to go brown.
I mean, like, I get it. I get it for the purpose of it. I would probably have, if I was smart enough to do it, to have put that together to do it, I, you know, wasn't worried about getting arrested if that came down to it. I mean,
but
I get it.
Isn't that amazing?
That is.
That's the best part of this whole story.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
I love the point of the entire thing, that it just mocks the concept of art having worth like this. And don't get me wrong, I'm pissed that Picasso's paintings started selling as much as they did after he died.
They should have been selling
while he was making them.
The thing is the art culture and the way that art culture works is literally just a way for rich people to move money around.
Totally.
I mean, it's just that simple. I mean, you look at things like, especially here living in the Northern California area, Thomas Kinkade, who I believe is a Northern California local. In fact, fairly close to local to where we are.
I think he just recently passed, too, a few years ago. And there was a There was a like a museum. He had a Kincaid, like a small museum over at the Galleria. In,
well, what's funny is his paintings used to sell, especially like '90s, late '90s, early 2000s.
Oh, Kincaid was all over the place.
His paintings sold like mad, but people never considered
those.
He
had a deal with Disney and everything too. Yeah. Did you see that? He did Kincaid Disney paintings and all that. They sold for mad money
in Old Sac. Mm-hmm. Was it Stage 9?
Yeah,
they had tons of those pictures. Yep. Really good stuff. What's funny about all of that is, he wasn't considered a really great artist. He was considered somebody that kind of just pandered to the people. But yeah. Like, really, what's the real definition of a great artist? To me, it's somebody that makes people happy, that is able to express their art in a way that other people can get in some way. Now, I mean, not everybody happy, but they express art in a way that other people can connect to. I guess that's a better way to explain it.
Yeah.
They express their art in ways that people can connect to. Now, it may just be one person that connects to it, or it may be, you know, a million people that connect to it, but it's still art in some way, shape, or form. It's still your expression of it. So, I mean, that banana story is freaky. So, I mean, do you want me to install one of those in your house, dude?
Just duct tape a banana to the wall?
Yeah. I'll do it different, though.
Okay.
Since it's me, I'll do a peach. How's that?
Okay. Deal. That seems I think my favorite parody of the banana duct tape to the wall was I'm part of a... audio engineers group on Facebook.
So
somebody gaff-taped a microphone to the wall.
I have even better, dude.
Uh-oh.
I'm gonna go one step higher.
Okay.
I'm gonna outdo this.
Duct tape a fruit basket?
No.
Okay.
I'm gonna duct tape myself to the wall.
That's weird.
Yeah. But okay. It's art.
Like, are you gonna like fully duct tape yourself to where you're trapped on the wall?
No, just like one strap of duct tape. Just a single one. Just one, yeah. Actually, no, let's do two. Let's get like an X design, you know what I'm saying?
Dig it.
That would work.
Yeah.
But that's freaky, man. I wish I thought of it. I wish I thought of it.
Me too.
Like, tape a banana. You know,
that's what I love about the concept of it is
that's like when you think of it,
when you go back. Yeah. When you go back to it, when you really think about what the original artist went through, it's just like these people will get obsessed over anything.
Yeah.
I could duct tape a banana to the wall. Wait a minute. I'm going to duct tape a banana to the wall.
Yeah.
Like, that's all it was. It's so simple.
It is.
I love it.
Damn it. Wish I'd come up with that idea.
I know, right?
Damn it. All right. Any more to that?
Moving right on. No, that's the story. That's the story, and it's fantastic, and I hope that there's more. I hope there's more. I'm going to try to pay attention to the story of the banana duct tape to the wall. But I believe, I mean, it's lost its worth at this point.
Yeah.
It got eight. I love it.
But then there's another one. So what does that mean?
It's like a car. You drive it off the lot?
I wouldn't put it quite like that because at least a car has a useful function even after you drive it off the lot. I mean, banana gives you some potassium. That's about it.
Yeah, I don't know. Something. But yeah.
So to the discussion I was wanting to have. My rant. Now, I want to preface this rant,
okay,
with the fact that language and vocabulary is important, okay?
Okay.
The way we talk about things are important. The specific wording we use to talk about things, it's important.
Okay.
Okay? Especially when we're dealing with fandom.
Okay?
When we're dealing with being fans of things.
Right.
The language can be very important because when we start to have a discussion, okay, we'll use football as the example to start with, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You've made it very clear during our football discussions on here and then also in person with our football discussions that you are a passing fan of football.
Yes.
You will occasionally see a game played, typically like Super Bowl or maybe playoff games.
Yeah, you know.
And, you know, the team that you followed as a child or have not fully followed, but you may have worn their gear at some point or another. You mm-hmm. knew about the team. You're interested to hear how they're doing.
Yeah.
But you're not, you couldn't tell me who you might be able to tell me who the current quarterback is. Maybe.
No, I can't.
Okay. Can you tell me a single player on the roster at this point in time? This is for the San Francisco 49ers,
yeah,
by the way.
You know, it's really funny. What's really sad is the fact the only one I could think of at this moment is Richard Sherman.
Yeah, that would be the only one you probably could think of.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But you may...
I consider that kind of sad, but at the same time, it's only because he's been such a controversial figure, not because he's a player. Like, I don't know any of the other players.
Yeah. I'm sure if I threw out some names, they'd be like, oh, okay. Like if I told you the quarterback was Jimmy Garoppolo.
Okay, I've heard that name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, but you make it clear that you're kind of a passing fan of it.
Yeah, totally.
You don't try to say to somebody that you're a fan of the thing.
No, it's not worth.
And then not be able to.
I could say I like something. That's essentially good, the farthest I go. I could say that I like something and I enjoy it.
This is where I say the language that we use when we have these discussions are important.
Mm-hmm.
Because when people try to talk sports with me, first thing that'll come up usually is football.
Okay.
And I make it clear I am a huge football fan. Professional football only, though. I know a little bit about college football.
Okay.
But I'm not really a fan. I don't really watch games. I only know a very, very small amount. So we start talking about football. Then they try to branch off typically into other sports-related subjects. At which point I stop them and say, look, I know nothing about basketball. I know some old stuff about baseball, but nothing relevant for right now. And those are the only things I kind of really consider a sport. So anything beyond that, I mean, if you want to talk about activities like soccer or other activities like race car driving, I'm sorry, neither one of which are sports in my opinion, then, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not the guy to talk to because I don't know anything about these things. I try to be clear about what I have knowledge about and what I don't have knowledge about.
Okay.
So I find myself week or two ago, waiting in line for, actually not even waiting in line. I already processed and paid for my order. I was waiting for the people to go and get my, my layaway items that I had, put on layaway
mm-hmm.
months before
because
mm-hmm. they had to dig them out of some trailer that they had, somewhere, in behind the premises of where I was.
Okay.
And there was this woman there with me waiting for the same exact thing. Waiting for her stuff to be brought out. And during conversation, my phone happened to go off.
So the Imperial March starts playing.
Well, the Imperial March is just my text messaging tone.
Oh.
Any of my notifications are the Cantina music.
Oh, okay.
And then my ringtone for phone calls is the main theme from The Force Awakens because it has a slightly different timbre to it than mm-hmm. the other main themes. It's still the original. It's still the same John Williams theme, but it has mm-hmm. a little bit of a different feel to it. I think it's in a different key setting or whatever.
Okay.
Because of the difference, different tone of The Force Awakens. So I have, you know, Star Wars, basically everything when it comes to my phone. And I mean, all my backgrounds are Star Wars. My case is Star Wars.
Okay.
I mean, I'm Star Wars is life to me.
Yeah.
So phone goes off and I hear one of the scarier things for a complete stranger to try to say to me.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I'm in a situation where, you know, those public situations where strangers end up talking to you and you feel like you kind of have to talk a little bit, but you try to limit it as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I hear one of the scary things. Oh, Star Wars. I love Star Wars. I'm a huge fan. This is a problem for me. This scares me. It scares me because people say things like that they're a huge fan of something or that they love something. Casually, I think. Not really meaning it. And it opens up that little hole for me, that little spot of, is this somebody I can actually interact with and talk to on a real level? Or do I have to be careful what I say because they really don't know what they're talking about? They are just, you know, casual fans of something. They like this thing, but they're not really fans. They're not really, and not even to my level of hardcore, but even a moderate level of hardcore. You know what I mean? A moderate level of knowledge of the thing. Get what I'm saying?
For me, it's a scary thing. I believe I do, and I'm becoming slightly skeptical of the conversation here, but continue.
Oh, no. Now, I have learned over the years that I am especially when it comes to certain things, I am a hardcore fan.
Right.
So there's certain things that I expect even somebody who is a moderate level fan to just not know.
Okay.
And I get that.
Okay.
I get that. Although if you tell me that you're a fan of we'll use the Star Wars example. If you tell me you're a Star Wars fan, right? Oh yeah, I'm a Star Wars fan, big Star Wars fan. I love Star Wars so much. But you've only seen of the, what are we going to use? You want to use 8 movies or you want to use 9 movies? You want to throw Rogue One in there or you want to just throw the Skywalker saga so far?
No, let's do Rogue One. Let's throw it in there.
So how about Han Solo? You want to throw that in there too? Because it's one of the movies.
Haven't seen it.
So we'll throw Han Solo in. So we're looking at 10 cinematic releases, 10 movies that have been in the cinema. And I'm going to be nice and not include the Clone Wars animated movie that did go to the cinema. Okay. I'll just include the main live action movies, okay?
Okay.
If you tell me of those 10 movies that you've only seen 3 of them, but you're a huge Star Wars fan and you love Star Wars so much, and dangling from your backpack or purse is a BB-8 lanyard, and you have a R2-D2 phone case, but you've only seen 3 of the movies, claiming to be a huge fan, I think it's at that point that I just kind of go, huh?
How old is this person?
I'm going to say within our age group.
Okay.
Within 5 years, plus or minus of our age group.
Okay.
So, this person says, she says, it's a woman, she says, you know, yeah, I love Star Wars. It's, you know, a huge fan of Star Wars. I'm like, okay. And again, I don't know how much I should engage and how much I shouldn't. But so far, she seems very nice.
Okay.
I'm going to be waiting here for a while. So I thought, all right, let's see if I can try to engage this person in some conversation about the topic. Now, again, I can be, if a person can admit, oh, you know, I know a little bit about it, but whatever. I'm good at being okay with that. Admit your lack of knowledge. Mm-hmm. Like, again, you're more of a Star Trek fan than you are a Star Wars fan.
Mm-hmm.
I can talk to you about all the Star Trek movies
mm-hmm.
because I know the Star Trek movies pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
If you were wanting to get in depth with any of the series, that's where I'm going to say, okay, my knowledge is limited. I know a decent amount about Next Generation,
mm-hmm.
An okay amount about the original series,
mm-hmm.
but
you're talking Voyager, DS9, I know Enterprise,
nothing about Voyager, DS9. I mean, the only thing I know about Voyager is that's Captain Janeway, right?
Voyager is Janeway, yeah.
Okay, and then DS9 is a space station, and the actor was Avery Brooks, that was Sisko, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's where, and then Scott Bakula was in Enterprise.
Yes.
That's about where my knowledge ends with those series.
Okay.
And so
You know, Enterprise takes place before TOS.
Yes, I know that.
Okay, that's good.
I know that, but that's again where much of my stuff ends. I know that there's the new series that's out that also takes place before the original series, it takes place kind of before or congruent with the
it's
original
a parallel
series.
Timeline.
Yeah, which the new movies are a parallel timeline as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I again, when it comes to the movies, I know them because I've seen all the movies multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm letting you know this is where my knowledge is limited when it comes to these things.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, I'm trying to be clear with my language.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start talking to the person's like, yeah, have you seen The Mandalorian? Because that came up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, yeah, I saw The Mandalorian. Isn't it great to have all those stories, have the baby Yoda? We can go and learn all the whole backstory of Yoda and what happens to him, like, that has no connection to The Mandalorian. It'd be great to learn the backstory of like C-3PO and R2-D2 and know all of their backstory.
That already got established.
I'm just kind of like, again, I'm at this moment of C-3PO. And I'm just saying, I'm saying in my head, I don't want to say this out loud because there's other people around and I'm starting to go, oh my God, what did I get myself into? I tried to have some kind of conversation with somebody that I thought maybe might be knowing of similar things to me.
Sorry. It's your reaction to it is what I'm laughing at, by the way.
And yeah, it's like we saw who created C-3PO and there's the backstory there. There's the backstory all through the Clone Wars TV series, animated TV series. There's even some of them in the Rebels animated TV series.
Did you explain this?
No, I didn't. I'm listening to her, and she's also saying this backstory again. Backstory of C-3PO, the backstory of R2-D2, and I'm like, actually, I did say, well, they have. I mentioned the Clone Wars. I said, well, they have the Clone Wars animated series. Oh yeah, of course. Oh no, You don't even know the Clone Wars animated series even exists. Okay.
This is an opportunity to introduce that.
Well, it is an opportunity to introduce it, but at the same time, I think the part that's irritating to me is like, this is a person who represents to me this kind of new subculture of these, because it used to be a fangirl or a fanboy had at least some real fanship of the thing, but like this is the new fangirl fanboy subculture where they kind of like the thing because now it's popular to like it. They've jumped on the popularity train of the thing, but they're not really the fans. And that would be okay if they admitted that was the reason for it, that they have jumped on the train because now it's cool, now it's well known. But when the person keeps going acting like they have all this knowledge of the stuff and trying to have a conversation about it, but it's very, very clear that they have not really researched they have no real understanding of what the thing is they're talking about. They don't know what they're talking about. And that's where it gets a little bit, it's like she initiated the conversation about this without knowing enough about the subject to really have initiated the conversation. And even when I was trying to very politely kind of inform her about some of her lack of knowledge in the things, she still perseverated with having the knowledge, but you know, like she had knowledge, but she didn't. Because then we moved into Marvel movies and the Marvel universe and talking about the various things in the Marvel universe and how she, first of all, trying to connect the X-Men movies to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which, as you and I have had a discussion about with other people, they're not connected.
They're not connected.
They are completely different universes.
So far, they have not been connected. They may introduce them in Phase 4, but they're not connected.
Talk about the casting.
This is such a nerdy conversation.
Talk about the casting of some of the various people in those roles, which, by the way, she also mentioned being a Star Trek fan. Earlier in the Star Wars conversation, but then she mentioned that, you know, we were talking about the casting and she's like, who they got for Professor X, said, yeah, you know, Patrick Stewart is awesome. Yeah. I mean, great in Star Trek too. Oh yeah. Right. He was in Star Trek. I'm like, this is the second most famous captain of the Enterprise ever. And I only say second most famous because I mean, Kirk. Who is more famous than Kirk?
Right.
This is the second most famous captain ever. And you're having the realization, oh, right. The same person who was sitting, the same bald guy sitting in a chair as an X-Man was also sitting in a chair as a captain. So I'm like, I'm having my things and we're going over the different casting things. And then, well, and of course, you know, Hugh Jackman was great as Wolverine. And that's when I lost my stuff. And stuff is a euphemism word I'm using instead of the word I want to use.
Okay.
I lost it at Hugh Jackman.
You did?
Lost it.
Why? You think he was a terrible Wolverine?
Yes.
Why?
Because of one factor, which I know for you may
if
not
you
be a
big... you say he's too
yes,
tall,
yes,
I swear to
yes,
God.
Yes!
James?
Sorry, I got loud. I'm sorry.
Yes. It's fine.
No,
it's fine.
This is
it's,
the...
Don't
this
worry.
Is the,
we're not clipping here.
This
don't worry
is the
about
issue.
It.
And it's an issue for a reason. This is an informative part of the character. You need to understand his height is an important part of the character, especially in relevance to the other X-Men around him.
Okay.
It is important that he is this short, burly, hairy dude.
Okay.
Because that leads into why he's got kind of the anger complex that he has.
Okay.
It adds into it. It adds into the fact that there are people that at first underestimate him because, yeah, he may be muscular, but he's this little tiny dude. He's like, what is he, 5'4" or 5'5" in the comics?
He's supposed to be 5'4".
Next to a 6'1" Cyclops. So when you see the two of them together, you want that visual thing is important. Now, I'm not saying that Hugh Jackman did not do the best performance that he could do. He did. He did a fantastic performance. I'm also not saying that there would have been any other actor maybe at the time period that really could have done justice to the what was given to him in the script, which I don't, I think if there's any fault in the performance aspect of Wolverine, it had to do with the script, not with what Hugh Jackman did. I feel that they softened up the character a little too much for the purposes of what they were doing. They made him a little too sympathetic a character, and they focused too much on him in the X-Men movies. I think he should not have been the main character through the plot of the original X-Men movies, the two Bryan Singer, and then I forget the guy who did the Rush Hour guy did the third one. But I don't think he should have been as much the main character, just because of the fact that from the X-Men dynamic, it should have been more, in my opinion, Cyclops, you know, Scott-centric and Jean Grey-centric than it was Wolverine and Jean Grey-centric. Just because, again, if you're dealing with the X-Men, it's not, to me, those movies felt like Wolverine and the X-Men, not the X-Men. But that's a story.
It's really funny that you say that, because there literally was a cartoon series titled Wolverine and the X-Men that came out around that time frame.
And again, that's a story issue. That's not a Hugh Jackman issue. Hugh Jackman had nothing to do with that character being dealt with that way.
Mm-hmm.
That was literally the way they wrote the story and the way they set the story up.
Okay.
So again, my Hugh Jackman issue is literally the height. Otherwise, if they could have digitally just made him shorter, I'd have been perfectly fine with Hugh Jackman's interpretation of it. But the height is a big issue, because that leads into why his character has the kind of, again, the anger response that he has. It leads into who the character is as a person.
Well, there's a, no, I, okay. So they did remove the height as a factor in Wolverine's character development. But one of the things that they understood more than anything was, I don't know, there's a lot of other factors that make him relatable as someone who he's a relatable character with an unrelatable experience.
Yes, and I get all those pieces. Just the height to me is a sticking point. And go back. Here's another.
Okay.
I mean, shoot, Disney Plus needs to be paying us some money. Here's another Disney Plus plug. When you get yourself some Disney Plus to be able to watch The Mandalorian,
okay,
go back and watch the original X-Men animated series.
Okay.
Because it's there. It's all there on Disney Plus. The X-Men animated series. I'm talking the original 90s.
No. I know.
You know, the
I know. I'm trying to see as to whether they must have lifted it from Amazon, because I was watching it on Amazon for a while.
And look, if you look,
Amazon,
and you see,
or Hulu, I can't remember. It was on one of them.
I don't remember either. But if you look and you see, you watch that and you see the height difference is obvious in there.
Yeah.
Between them, it makes a big deal for the character. It really does. It really informs the character as to, again, his personality, who he is in the team. And again, that's a good mix of making him a member of the team as opposed to the main focus of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot there. I mean, the team is more Scott-centric, Jean Grey-centric, Storm-centric than it is Wolverine-centric throughout that.
Okay.
And it's more balanced than it is than the movies are.
Okay.
But that's my biggest issue. I understand that's a personal issue.
Right.
But it's one that sets me off.
I can see that. Okay, so going back to
this conversation,
yeah.
So I tell her, I explained to her that I was unhappy with him because of the height issue. Nothing else, just because of the height issue.
What'd she say?
What do you mean?
Okay, so this is somebody who has
I go into the description. You know, Wolverine's only like 5'4" in the comics. Oh, I had no idea.
Well, okay, calm down there, pal. I'm gonna have to stick a cork in this for a bit. All right, man.
Go ahead.
Here's my point. My point is the fact that when it comes down to comic book culture, the last 15, 20 years has only become part of the mainstream very recently.
Yes, I know.
And for a long time, you're dealing with people that are in the same generation as you that have been dealing with the – there's one thing that I have dealt with personally for myself.
Yeah.
I've only more – I want to say in the more recent like 10 or so years started to become more comfortable with being open about things that I liked during my childhood.
Okay.
Personally, there was some, I don't know why it was there, but there was some slight level of personal embarrassment that came with the the stigma of nerddom that came with the things that I liked.
I understand exactly what you're saying.
Now,
to be the nerdy guy and to like all the nerdy things.
Yes.
I mean, I was made fun of for years for being a Star Wars fan.
Hold
for
on
being
one second.
D&D, all that.
Because I have a point. Yeah. I have a point.
Go ahead.
Everyone who gets into this stuff, you have basically two people, okay? You have people that wanted to like those things that may have intentionally avoided them for a long period of time because they were appealing, yet they thought that they were not for them because of what they thought other people would think.
Yeah.
And you have the people that are essentially, and I'm talking about people that are new to this whole culture, okay?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you have the people that are literally younger and just getting introduced to it.
Yes.
And it's only because the people of the second tier are those people that have been exposed to it because of the corporatization of nerd culture and the fact that it has become such a hot pop commodity now.
I get that.
So, her saying that she's a huge Star Wars fan, all this information's new to her. It still is.
I understand.
She missed the movies from the 90s. She missed she missed possibly even the last. She's at least got a BB-8, you know.
She's got keychain. Well, that's the thing.
She's into a couple of these things.
Yeah.
And she's very, very, very new to it.
I understand
decades
that.
And decades worth to catch up.
I understand
on.
That. And for instance,
but
if I
don't think that no, there's no, I, any.
I understand. Here, help me.
Yeah.
Let me.
What's going on?
I understand. And I've dealt with, for instance, younger people who have, you know, the younger generations, some of the younger millennials, the Zs, who will be like, oh gosh, I love the original Star Wars trilogy. Seeing Anakin as a little kid, and you know that moment,
No, sweet, I understand
sweet,
that.
Sweet honey child, you have some things to learn. But I can understand that. The best thing you could do is
take these people under your wing, man.
Here's the thing. I am totally okay with people being new to the fandom, to people that don't understand these things, that even say, I love this thing, but then don't try to act like you're the expert on it. You have expert ability on it. Be able to understand your limitations within it.
I don't think this... Okay, look, I am someone who has been exposed enough to the culture to not make those statements, but I am only one person.
No, I know, and that's why... And like I said,
I
was not...
with stating that I am not into a thing, or
and I was not
passively
rude,
into something.
And I was not rude to this woman's face, and this woman doesn't know me by anything, that she's not going to hear the podcast and probably ever know that I'm talking about her.
Right.
But at the same time, it's more of the way that she... It's not her lack of knowledge, because I'm great for people wanting to get more knowledge about it.
Yeah.
This is a double-edged sword of these things being so popular now.
Yeah.
You're right. People like me, I'm not going to necessarily lump you in unless you want to lump yourself into this.
Okay.
Which you kind of did, but still.
Okay.
People like me who were into all the nerdy things possible throughout high school and were made fun of and poked fun at for being into them and kind of, I will admit, I didn't restrain it.
Right.
I wore it as a badge of honor that people would be making fun of me for it.
I ran the other direction for a little while.
But then again, you are
it's
also
only more recently that I'm really catching up on that stuff too, and I still am.
You are also somebody who is, I would say a much more approachable and nice, almost people pleasing type person than me. Not in a bad way.
But I understand.
You like to keep the peace and keep people happy and keep that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and
totally.
I'm more the person that's going to stand in the middle of the road with a sign and tell everybody to F off. So that's part of the difference in our personalities. I love my thing and I'm going to love it no matter what. Like, I don't have guilty pleasures when it comes to things that I like.
Yeah, there's no guilt in it.
I don't feel guilty at all. I like it.
Dig it.
Again, Spice World. That's the biggest one.
Dude, yeah. You have zero shame.
Nope.
None at all. And that's fine. That's great.
None at all. And it's not making me any, it makes me a different person than you, but that doesn't make me any better or worse than you. It's just the way that we approach the world. And each person has to have their own thing with it. But again, this is double-edged that sword. These things are more open for people to love. Now you feel even more comfortable bringing out the love that you have for all these previously just nerdy things that were only nerdy things.
Right.
The double edge of that is you have people that are getting into these nerdy things that don't really feel passionate about it, that just do it because it's the popular thing to be into nowadays. And that was kind of the vibe I was getting off for. I may be wrong because I only had this discussion. I was only there for 45 minutes discussing this with her. It lasted that long.
Hey, that's a long time, actually.
Yes, it was a long discussion where I held my tongue.
I would ask you what you were waiting for, but I don't want you to give anything away.
It was
this was for Christmas stuff, I'm assuming. Presents for people. Yeah, of course, of course.
So, I mean... But so it was a long time, and I had to stand there and wait.
Yeah, that's a long time.
And I was, hey man, I was good. I didn't, even when I left, I walked away in a nice way. I just kept biting my tongue and like, you know what? This is somebody that just doesn't, the vibe I was getting was this person was into the stuff because it was what was popular and had a very surface level knowledge of it.
Yeah.
Just enough to be able to discuss with non massive fans like me,
yeah,
to make it seem like they knew something, but when you really were starting to question the knowledge wasn't really there. And that's the double-edged part of this sword, is you get these people that are basically, for lack of a better word, that are posers in this situation.
Yeah.
They're pretending to know, they're pretending to be a part of it because it's become the cool thing to be a part of.
Yeah.
But they really don't know, and that's where my irritation comes.
I can
again
understand
new that. People wanting to gain the knowledge. Admit where your lack of knowledge is. Again, we had our football conversation on here.
Yeah.
You took part very little because you didn't necessarily know much. And me and Scott had the football conversation.
Yeah,
we discussed even that time that at some point we need to get Scott back over to do another recording and mm-hmm. for you guys to talk about 80s and early 90s heavy metal music.
Yeah,
at which point the only thing I would interject occasionally would be basically saying that all those bands suck in comparison to Metallica, and I would just say that over and over because literally.
Well, don't give away the episode, man.
Literally, that's the edge. Well, I'm just giving away my part of the episode. That's the extent of my knowledge, really. I have very limited knowledge of heavy metal from any time frame because I only really like Metallica as a heavy metal band. So it would be – that's a conversation you and Scott need to have because you both have a lot more knowledge.
Right.
I think that's one that Scott might even have more knowledge than you on. Possible. I don't know.
He probably does, yeah. Actually, to be real.
So – and that's the thing is I don't mind people admitting when their knowledge is a little bit lacking in the thing.
Yeah.
And being willing to learn different things. One of our best listeners, my nephew Alex.
Yeah.
His knowledge is still lacking in the Star Wars stuff. And his fiance's knowledge is a little bit lacking in the Star Wars stuff. So he's been teaching her. He has a pretty decent knowledge, but there are some things he still doesn't completely know.
Yeah.
So it's been, you know, some going back and forth. I think I had a little joke with him. He was talking about the Christmas special and how it was really weird to watch it because so much of it was in Wookiee. And I'm like, what, you don't speak Wookiee? What the hell, man? I'm disappointed in you. He's like, well, you can watch it with me and you know, interpret for me. I'm like, crap, I don't speak Wookiee either. I was just kidding. Crap, man. I can speak a little bit of Huttese, but no Wookiee, man. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is, trying to gain the knowledge, trying to learn.
I always wanted
stuff.
To learn Klingon because it's an actual dialect and a language you can actually use.
Nerd.
Shut up, James.
Trekkie. Oh my god.
At least it's an actual language. It's like
Huttese is an actual language.
Really?
Yes.
Cool.
Yes, Huttese is a language.
Huttese is a language. Elfish is one as well.
Well,
that was like crazy stuff.
Hold on. What are you talking about? When you're talking Elfish.
Elfish.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking Tolkien Elfish.
Okay. There's actually like 5 different Elven dialects in Tolkien.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I know.
He was a linguist, wasn't he?
He was actually...
He was a linguistics professor, wasn't he?
Okay. I promise that we will have a discussion about this another time.
Okay.
But just to give you the preface of it, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, both of them, were written as fake histories. So was the Silmarillion, by the way. These are fake histories that he made up to basically give a backing for all these languages he just straight up created.
That's fantastic.
He created a bunch of languages. Each of them have a base in real languages.
Yeah.
Because, yes, he was a linguist. Each of these languages have a base in real languages. He made up an entire history with all these different people and all these different things happening to explain where all these languages came from. And that's what those stories are. They are a made up history of these made up languages that he had. That's all they are.
That's fantastic.
It's more than fantastic. It's like freaking brilliant. It's like, I
want to
He created the rule book for fantasy.
He did all of that.
But it's like, hey, I want to have a bunch of fun languages. You know, I'm going to create all these cool things. It's based this one on Finnish because I love the sounds in that. And this one's going to be based off of Old English. But these are Old English guys that had horses. So like how Old English would like name everything after specific things in their environment. All these people's names are going to be based on the root word for the in this language for horses. And I'm serious.
That's great.
And then these elves, I'm going to show how these elves splinter into these different groups because of all these different things that happen.
Right.
And as a result, we have multiple dialects of this of this elven. You know, there's Sindarin. There's, there's one that starts with Q. I can't remember how, what it's called. But there's like all these different dialects. And it's like, I'm going to do all this. And then the black speech is going to be based on elven, but it's not going to be elven. And it's like, okay. Well, how do I explain why I came up with all these languages? I can't just come up with, I know what I can do. I can write a whole bunch of books about history for these languages. And that's the Silmarillion is literally like, you can read the Silmarillion almost as if it's a, it's Tolkien's version of, sorry if religious people get offended by it, but it's Tolkien's version of Genesis.
Yeah, I get it.
The whole, the book of Genesis.
Yeah.
Because it all, it talks about that's all cool. the creation and all the, yeah. So, but anyway. Topic for another time.
I was going to say, yeah, let's not get too deep into it, man.
So again, this was just my rant a little bit about fake appearing fans of things, especially of things I love. People, be clear with your language. Tell people what you're what you do and don't know about the subject. Don't pretend to be a fan of something if you're not really a fan of something, unless your entire purpose is to make anybody angry. I mean, I can say I spent an entire party one time having to argue with a drunken guy because I made the off comment that the album Appetite for Destruction was one of the worst albums of all time. And this guy was convinced it was the best album of all time.
Hmm.
Right? That's the GNR album?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's their debut.
Yeah, I said it was a terrible album. This guy said it was the best of all time. He spent the entire night trying to argue with me as to why it was. And he was so drunk, it was just amusing to me to keep the argument going. This was at a party that you were at, sir.
Oh, this wasn't me.
No, he was. I think he was a coworker of yours or a former coworker of yours.
Oh,
yeah, it was a fun party.
Oh man, you're gonna have to tell me who this is after this podcast is over.
I will explain. I'll describe him to you. I don't remember the guy's name. I don't know if he actually gave me his name or not. Dude was pretty tore up by the time I started talking to him.
Okay.
So, anyway. Thank you all for listening. Letting me do a little bit of ranting and finding out the beauty of bananas.
I know, right?
Mike, where would people be listening to us now, or where can they listen to us in the future?
Oh, man. Well, you can listen to us on Spotify and Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, if you put in our URL, TuneIn, all those little podcast places. But our main website is thezennialchronicles.com or zenkron.com if you don't want to type that much. Speaking of Zenkron, you can find us at Zenkron on Twitter and on Facebook. And also, now, if you're listening to us on YouTube or watching us on YouTube or whatever, you can actually go back and listen to every single episode that we have ever made, because in the regular podcast, you can go back to like 10, I think. But YouTube has our entire archive. So head to our YouTube page and go ahead and like the video. If you're on YouTube, hit subscribe, hit the little bell icon, get notified, all that fun stuff. And yeah.
Yeah, click the bell.
Click the bell.
Click the bell.
Click the bell.
We like the clicking the bell. All right. Thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.